show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome in to the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. Folks, I am your host, Jeff Herr, and with me is the... I didn't do my homework. I didn't think of a word. I don't want to force it. So you're just Michael Engel. I don't have an adjective today. But Mike, how are you doing on this fantastic evening?
I feel nondescript.
Oh, well played, sir. Well played. All right. So, you know, Mike and I were kind of talking. And, I mean, Mike, I don't know about you, but in terms of Royals prospects, I guess I do know kind of where I'm getting at with this, but I mean, but just from, you know, from the email chat, the discussions that we often have and everything. And I mean, prospect talk has been incredibly minimal recently. And I have Royals prospects, obviously. I mean, if we want to talk about the nucleus of this show, or I guess nucleus isn't the right word, but the start of this show, you know, I came in as just like, hey, we need a substitute host for Troy before I was brought on permanently to where we are now. But I was brought on just because you offered that, you know, kind of guest spot, if you will, to writers of Kings of Kaufman. I was writing for you at KOK at the time. And I was kind of the prospect guy. That's what I wanted to cover, and that's what I wanted to write about. And so I'd write my prospect updates every week, and I was following, and I was getting all the box scores and everything from all the different levels of the farm system. And so I was kind of consumed with that for like a year, you know, and that was right in the middle of the best farm system ever stuff. And then now it's just like I hardly even look at that stuff, you know. I mean, just from our discussions and from the podcast and stuff, we haven't really talked about it. Do you secretly spend much time going over Royals prospects that you don't tell us about?
Not really. I mean, the big names, you know. I mean,
right.
Bubba Starling, Kyle Zimmer, Raul Mondesi, Miguel Amonte. I mean, you know those guys because they've been, you know, For most of those guys, Bubba was 2011 draft pick, and Zimmer was 2012, and Mondesi was signed in 2012. And so, you know, those guys, it's like, yeah, you know those guys because you hear about them every year. They're in every prospect list every year. But a lot of the guys, you know, down the line, and even these guys, you know, we kind of lose track because, you know, Zimmer has been hurt. So, you know, it's you're not paying as much attention to what he's doing. Mondesi's kind of been down there, and you know he'll be up, but it's not like paying attention all the time like in 2010 when Mike Moustakas and Eric Hosmer were hitting the crap out of the ball. And then Bubba, it's kind of like you kind of get a feeling, you know, you see updates, and it's like he is improving a little bit here and there, definitely better than, you know, a couple of years before. But it's still like the focus over the last couple of years, ever since they got James Shields, was, okay, well, Will Myers is gone, and the Royals are actually winning more games than they lose now, and now they're making the playoffs, you know, starting in 2014, and now they're winning World Series. And so, yeah, you get distracted from the prospects because the big league team is winning. And that's probably the way I guess it should be if you're not a hardcore prospect guy, which, you know, we – would stay informed in, you know, the early years of this podcast, but, you know, we weren't necessarily like the baseball prospectus guys where we're at every minor league game because
right.
It's just not practical for what we do. But it is definitely time to kind of get a refresher on some of the guys in the system and catch up on where they are now, the top guys, plus the guys that, you know, are only really names on a page at this stage. So, you know, it's definitely not what it was before, where you knew what, you know, your Donovan Ventura did in his A-ball start in 2011. It's, you know, now it's like, oh, they still have an A-ball team. Okay. You know enough to have an idea of what depth's in the system, but not necessarily looking forward to that group of people coming up, because, you know, the big league team's pretty much set. And, you know, honestly, there's also not like the same number of just huge prospects like there were a couple of years ago. So, no, I don't spend my nights
poring over the Lexington legends. And with that in mind, folks, we have ourselves a guest for you tonight. We have Jim Callis from MLB. He's a senior writer at MLB Pipeline. Has a lot of good information about the Royals and the Royals farm system. So if you give us just 1 second, we're going to get Jim, and then we're going to go into a lot of detail about the Royals prospects. Then we'll go to a break after that, and we'll come back with some thoughts for you. Ladies and gentlemen, we have a very special guest with us on the show right now. Jim Callis, senior writer for MLBPipeline.com. Well, first of all, I guess, Jim, how are you doing on this evening?
Hey, I'm doing well. So you guys have to be excited. I can't remember if we must have talked last year about this time. And I will admit, I was very happy for the Royals in 2014, but I kind of felt like they overachieved a little bit. Thought they might come back to the pack a little bit, but you guys have to still be excited. Yeah, have you guys even stopped to come down at all from the elation of winning World Series? What is it, 4 months ago now?
Yeah, you know,
I still watch Game 5 quite often.
Yeah, the Royals fans on Twitter, every once in a while it'll be kind of like a live tweeting event where we watch a game or something. But Mike and I were just talking the other night about how, like, once a week I have to remind myself, like, oh my God, the Royals are the World Series champions. I've got the shirts and everything to prove it, but it's still kind of like, wow, it's actually a reality.
So, it's just so cool watching from afar. I mean, when Dan Moore and company took over that team, I mean, the cupboard was about as bare as could be at the big league level, at the minor league level. You know, the first major decision that the franchise made, they had the number one overall pick and took Luke Hochever, which, yeah, he contributed some, but I don't think he became what they hoped he would become. But yeah, those guys just took so much abuse, I think, for how long the process was taking. And I think the whole five-year plan thing's kind of overrated. You can't turn a baseball team around, at least that was in that kind of disarray, like the Pirates were too. It's not a five-year project. This isn't the Yankees or the Dodgers. You can just go out and spend. And I mean, as you guys know, I mean, Dayton and company took so much abuse when they made the Will Myers trade. And you had people nationally writing that Dayton was putting his job security ahead of the franchise's needs, and that could not have been more wrong. I just, you know, I did not grow up a Royals fan. I don't sit here and wear the blue and gold, but just so happy for Dayton Moore and J.J. Piccolo and Lonnie Goldberg and all the guys, you know, Gene Watson, all the guys who, you know, I can't believe I almost forgot to mention Art Stewart, but all right. These guys who've worked so hard. And I felt so bad for him the year before. I mean, the Royals basically could not have come any closer to winning the World Series without winning the World Series. I mean, I guess they could have lost in extra innings. And like I said, I didn't know if they were going to be able to get back. You know, I mean, you know how hard, even when you have a great team, it's hard to get back to the World Series. But it was just, it was very cool. I find myself when I'm watching the World Series kind of rooting for people that I respect, I know have put in, you know, a lot of time and hard effort, and was just very gratified that the Royals won. It was kind of cool to watch from afar.
Yeah, it's one of those things, and you know, you talk about people being critical of Dayton Moore and everything, and probably none more so, at least from a podcast standpoint, than ours. You know, we were very critical because we started doing this around 2010, 2011, in that time frame, and you know, that's when it was, you know, year 5, 6, 7, and it was, weren't seeing the results. And so, you know, me especially, I was very critical. And I always said, you know, I'll be happy to be proven wrong, but for the first few years we hadn't been. And I was absolutely, have never been more happy to be wrong. And, you know, it's one of those things where, just like you said, it's especially with like Luke Hochaver having, he wasn't what they wanted him to be, but you know, having the role that he played and winning the World Series and things like that, like just kind of those types of stories give you that kind of warm feeling. I mean, we've seen Luke Hochaver at the worst, you know, seen him come through a Tommy John, and then to get back to that point, I mean, as a fan, just like it's absolutely just a really, really cool experience to be a part of. Something that, you know, I mean, only time I've seen it in my life. I was born the last time they won the World Series that year. So it's something I'll definitely always remember, just like my dad told me about it my whole life. So I'll be able to tell my future children about it. So it's definitely an awesome experience.
See, I'm a little bit older than you guys. I remember being in college. That was my freshman, my first year of first semester, I guess quarter actually, University of Georgia on the quarter system. My first quarter of college, I remember watching the Don Denkinger game, and then watching the next night and going, wow, this is really kind of a boring game seven. there's no drama in this, but yeah, no, it's just very guy. I can't imagine. I think there are a lot of people around baseball who felt like, hey, if we couldn't win, it was kind of cool to see the Royals win that.
I like to think that's how most people thought.
Maybe not in New York, but right. You know, elsewhere. Exactly. You know, they had to do it through hard work. It wasn't like they could just go out and buy guys. So yeah. Hats off to them.
And you know, the Royals, when they lost in 2014, I got married in that August, and I took my honeymoon to San Francisco actually with my wife. And so I was like, I got to wear my Royals hat, even though this was in February. So, you know, about this time last year. And it's easy to be gracious when you win.
Exactly.
But going through, you know, you really kind of felt like there was a true, like all the people that were baseball fans always commented if I was wearing my Royals hat, like, man, you guys really gave us a run. I thought you guys were going to win. You guys had a great season, all that kind of stuff. So, you know, I definitely think there was a little bit of, especially that season, because the Royals kind of coming out of nowhere. But with the Royals having such a good couple of years, you know, back in 2011, when they had the, you know, quote unquote, best farm system ever, that's pretty much, I mean, that dominated the discussion and everything, talk radio, podcasts, all that kind of stuff. But now, we always wondered back then, we're like, man, do good teams pay as much attention to their farm systems as we do? And having a good team the last couple of years, I can definitively say the answer is probably not. Because I have definitely not paid as much attention, and I don't think many have. Now, part of that may be the system as a whole, maybe it's not quite as exciting as it was back in 2011 from a prospect standpoint. But before we get into some of the individual prospects themselves, like, what can you give kind of an overview of the system, and you know, maybe where it ranks in as far as, you know, the rest of the farm systems in the major leagues?
Yeah, in terms of where it ranks, it's a little bit different at MLB.com than all the years I worked at Baseball America. We only rank the top 10 farm systems, I guess, so we don't single out teams as being thin. So I have broken down, like, when we unveil our new top 30 lists at the end of the month, we unveil them, we do a division per day, except for the top 10 farm systems, and then we kind of reveal them at the end in order and count them down, which is kind of cool. And the Royals aren't a top 10 farm system right now, and I haven't broken down precisely, are they 15 versus 20 or whatever. I mean, I guess the way I describe the farm system is it's rebuilding right now, which it makes sense. I mean, they gave up some talented players to get Ben Zobrist, to get Johnny Cueto. I don't think even if Cody Reed and Sean Manaea wind up being the best left-handers in baseball, I don't think anybody in Kansas City is going to rue making those trades. But, you know, last year, you know, it was a different I don't know if approach is the right word, but a different tact for the Royals. I mean, they had just gone to the World Series. They had another good team, and you're in it to win it. I mean, it seems so crazy saying this, but really anything less than a World Series last year would have been kind of a disappointment for the Royals. And so they traded prospects to bulk up the team, and now the system isn't as deep as it used to be. Certainly not when we had the nine guys on the BA Top 100, and it's amazing that none of those nine guys were Salvador Perez or Yordano Ventura at the time. and we still had nine Royals on the Top 100, and it's like I grabbed my prospect handbook from that year, and the crazy thing is Kelvin Herrera was number 30 on that list. But that said, he hadn't even done a whole lot at that point, but you know, it's crazy. You know, I mean, the good news is So I don't think the system, you know, it's probably in the bottom half. I wouldn't say the very bottom, but it's probably in the bottom half of farm systems in baseball right now after the trades and all the guys that have graduated to big leagues over recent years. But that said, I still think there's some cause for optimism in that you have a potential superstar shortstop prospect in Raul Mondesi. I don't know if I'd say I'm all in on Kyle Zimmer because I have to doubt his health a little bit. If you can keep Kyle Zimmer healthy, Kyle Zimmer could be the best pitcher developed by the Royals in a long, long time. I mean, he's got that kind of stuff. And the crazy thing about him getting hurt is if you looked at the last 10 years of all the college pitchers taken in the first round and you didn't know what was going to happen in the future and you said, okay, who's your best bet to stay healthy? You would pick Kyle Zimmer because this was a guy who was more of a third baseman in high school. He was recruited as a third baseman at San Francisco, more of a position player in high school, I should say. Low mileage on the arm, and he's super athletic, and yet this guy can't stay healthy. And other than that, I mean, those are the kind of the two guys who made our top 100. Other than that, most of their best prospects are their recent draft picks. You know, Ash Russell, Nolan Watson, Scott Blewett, Foster Griffin, Chase Filleau, those types of guys, with, you know, Miguel Almonte factoring in there somewhere. Bubba Starling has kind of resuscitated his career. He's in there. I don't know if it's a system where you're going to get a lot of immediate help, but at least, you know, they've had a lot of picks the last couple of years, and they're hoping some of those guys pan out. I mean, I kind of feel like, I don't know if you guys feel this way, you follow the Royals more closely than me. I mean, you kind of feel like you got most of the lineup in place. You know, it's a pretty good lineup. You're wondering where the pitching is going to come from. And I do think a lot of their better prospects are pitchers. You're not going to hit on all of them, but if they hit on a couple of them, they should be in pretty good shape for the next couple of years.
So in regard to Mondesi, he's ranked higher in that top 100 than Zimmer. He was 37th, Zimmer was 65th. The Royals, I think Jeffrey Flanagan tweeted something out that the Royals seem to at least be batting around the idea that he could be potentially a number three profile kind of hitter. Is that too optimistic? Is he going to be able to add enough pop to do that? I mean, he's filled out from a couple of years ago, but at this point, I mean, he's still kind of a typical looking shortstop when I look at him.
Yeah, I mean, I think the ceiling on him is, yeah, you could see. I think the absolute ceiling on him, you know, he might be a 15 to 20 home run guy, but he, with his speed and his, you know, hitting tools, I mean, he could be a 280 hitter. The problem is the Royals have done a lot of things very well the last few years. I have not liked the way they've handled Raul Mondesi. And the problem is he was too good too soon. I mean, he was good. He came over here at age 16, a young 16, and he was good in the Pioneer League. Or I guess he turned 17 this year, but he was good in the Pioneer League. And the problem is, so he goes to Class A, low Class A the next year. And, yeah, it was pretty solid. I mean, really solid for a 17-year-old. But the problem is since then is he really struggled at age 18 in the Carolina League. And then instead of repeating the Carolina League, he went to the Fall League. If I remember correctly, I don't think he drew a single walk in like 80 plate appearances in the Fall League. And he looked over his head in the Fall League, and then they sent him to Double A at age 19 last year, and it's more of the same. I mean, the guy, you wouldn't know it. I mean, you guys do because you follow the Royals. I mean, the guy had a 651 ops last year. He had a 279 on base percentage. It was 256 the year before. They need to let this guy catch his breath. My concern with Raul Mondesi is that if you keep moving him a level at a time, like, I don't think he's going to hit in Triple A this year if he goes to Triple A. I would just let him stay in Double A, catch his breath. You've got Escobar. You've got a World Series ring. You don't need to rush this guy. And I understand he was precocious, and he is precocious. But like, the difference between his tools and his performance right now, it's just wide gulf. I mean, guy hit 243 last year. He walked 17 times. He had 22 extra base hits. He only stole 19 bases because he wasn't on base enough. I mean, this is a guy, if he figures it out, I think you could realistically say the guy could be a 270 guy, 15 homers, steal a bunch of bases, and play Gold Glove defense. But I think they're kind of ruining the bat by pushing him like this. And it's, I mean, and this wasn't going to hurt his development, but I mean, it's just funny. On top of all that, the guy winds up making his big league debut in the World Series. His first guy ever does that. You know, and I mean, it wasn't a key story. I mean, the guy looked. I mean. He struck out very quickly in his one at bat in the World Series. So, yeah. I mean, this guy could be a superstar, but I worry that he's being pushed so aggressively that that's too quick. I mean, if it were me, and again, my hats are off to Royals. They've done a lot of things right. I would have started him last year in high A ball. I would have had him repeat the Carolina League and just said, look, there's nothing wrong with it. You're beginning the year 19. You're not going to turn 20 until the end of July. Right. There's nothing wrong with this. We just want you to catch your breath and become the player we think you've been. The guy's a switch hitter too. I mean, he, you know, number three is probably pushing it, but it looks crazy if you look at his numbers. I don't think he quite has that power. But if you told me that he hit 20 home runs in a big league season, I could see that. I mean, I could see him more as being a really good. Again, if they let him catch his breath and work on his on-base skills, I mean, the guy could bat, you know. I could see maybe batting second in a lineup and you're having unusual pop for that spot in the lineup.
So almost maybe profiling out kind of similar to Lorenzo Cain, maybe with a little less on the batting average side?
Yeah, I could see that maybe. There are very few – I mean, there's a lot of good shortstops. I mean, I know we have 20 shortstops on our new top 100 prospects list. And I think Raul's the 12th shortstop, and you know, and he still ranks in the top 40 prospects of the game. I mean, there's a lot of good shortstops, but there are not many shortstops who can. I didn't break this down. I don't know the exact answer to this, but if you were just going tool for tool, who has the best all-around tools? I don't know if there's a shortstop out there who's got better all-around tools than Raul Mondesi, but he needs to get time to develop them.
Wow, that's. That's some high praise. Yeah, hopefully they can kind of realize, hey, we've got Escobar, like you said, so we can afford to let him kind of just mellow out for a little bit. but you mentioned when given the whole system overview, Kyle Zimmer, and he's a guy that drafting out of college, I almost felt like it was back then they were kind of hoping similar to maybe what Brandon Finnegan started to turn out to be in the sense that, you know, 2012, 2013, they could expect him to be up there pretty quick and then transition from there, maybe a bullpen role into a starting role. And then like you mentioned, he just hasn't been able to be healthy, which was surprising. I mean, there was a shoulder. Was it a shoulder thing or an elbow thing when he was drafted?
I think he had bone chips in his elbow when he was drafted, and they knew about that. But then it's been biceps and lat and shoulder for the last couple of years. And, you know, it's not even the same thing. That, you know, and I mean, I know the shoulder's been cleaned out. I mean, the guy's still, I mean, for everything he went through last year, you know, and all the time he's missed, you know, when he did pitch last year, I mean, 72 strikeouts, 20 walks in 64 innings, you know, 2.39 ERA. Got back in the rotation in Double-A at the end of the year, kept the ball on the ground. I mean, I just would love to see this guy stay healthy. He's so athletic. I mean, like I said, there's no reason. You would not have thought this would have happened with this guy. You would have said, this guy is a good bet to stay healthy. This is, like, very little risk compared to the typical college pitcher. I mean, you're looking at premium stuff, premium athleticism, throws a ton of strikes. This guy could be their number one starter easy if he could stay healthy.
So, and I kind of remember when Kelvin Herrera was coming up, you know, because he was, most people don't really remember, he was a starter, and he was having similar issues where he just couldn't stay healthy, and they finally shifted him to the bullpen. He was able to stay healthy for an elongated period of time and became very dominant relief pitcher. So, I mean, do you see that as a possible path, or do you think he can get it all figured out at this point, or is it just something – it's hard to tell at this point.
I think that's more of a last resort. Like, if you really couldn't keep him healthy, I mean, I think you're at least 2 years away from that. But, like, the difference, you know, Kelvin Herrera was like 5'10". You know,
that's true.
He didn't have that kind of relief. You know, and Kyle is such a good athlete, too. I mean, I could see him maybe breaking into the big leagues on a good Royals club as a bullpen, as a way to manage his innings in his first year. We gets to the big league. I mean, the crazy thing was they were hoping to get him to the big leagues. I've lost track of which year it was now because he got hurt. Was it 2 years ago or was it last year where they were going to start him? I think it was 2 years ago, like 14, mm-hmm. where they were going to keep him, start his season late so he'd be ready to help him toward the end of the year. I think it was 14, right?
Yeah, that was that was the plan, yep.
Yeah, and here we are in 16. He still hasn't gotten there yet. But so I could see, because he has never pitched a ton of innings in a season, that maybe you break him into the big leagues, but it's just too early. The guy, the only thing that doesn't jump off the page as a positive about Kyle Zimmer is his ability to stay healthy. There's no reason beyond that that he shouldn't. I mean, and I would have thought he'd be in the big leagues by now. And it's funny because, I mean, the draft that they got him in, I mean, the three big college guys were Appel, Gossman, and Zimmer. And Appel hasn't been to the big leagues yet. I mean, he obviously went to draft in our year. And even Gossman, who's been in the big leagues, hasn't, you know, been a a real factor for the Orioles. I mean, none of those three guys has lived up to what people thought they were going to be yet.
Speaking of guys who haven't lived up to what they're going to be, the other kind of big name, I guess the three biggest names that we always hear about are Zimmer, Mondesi, and then, you know, Bubba Starling. Obviously, he's from this kind of area. You know, I'm in Lawrence, so I'm just down the road from Gardner, close to Kansas City. He finally kind of figured some stuff out last year. Is there reason for optimism? Is there is the contact going to be there from now on, or is it still going to be like hoping that he runs into some and then his defense provides most of the value?
You know, he definitely looks a lot. I saw him in the fall league the last 2 years, and in 2014, he did not look good at all. I think if you talk to anybody who saw him, even fans, but you talk to scouts who saw him out there, and they're just like, I don't know if this guy's going to play in the big leagues. He's just a mess at the plate. And, you know, last year he kind of got, you know, made some adjustments and got his timing better and smoothed out his swing a little bit. I don't think he's ever going to be a high average hitter. I don't think he's going to be more than a decent on base guy. You know, I don't think he's ever going to tap fully into his raw power, but I think he could be a useful big leaguer. Gun to my head, I think he's more on a good team, a good fourth outfielder than an everyday guy, or at least an everyday guy that you're counting on as being a key cog in your lineup. You know, I don't see him in the big leagues this year, but let's say, and I don't know, think the Royals necessarily gonna be able to afford, but let's say the Royals could keep this team together going forward. Like, you don't have to worry about free agency and you're going to be able to re-sign everybody, and we'll see what that happens. You know, I think you could carry a Bubba. I mean, can you imagine a defensive outfield of Alex Gordon in left and Kane in center and Bubba Starling right? I mean, that would be – I mean, they already have an unbelievable outfield, but that would be even more ridiculous. And I think, you know, you could bat Bubba seventh, and he'd probably hit 15 homers and steal 20 bases and play a great right field. Like, he could do that. But I don't think he's ever going to be the guy that you hoped, you know, this guy who had unbelievable tools when you drafted him, that, you know, when you're drafting fifth overall, do you think, okay, this guy's going to be our future number three hitter or number four hitter? I don't think he's going to be that guy. But he has gotten a lot better, and I think – you know, I think he actually fits nicely on the Royals, a team that values defense very highly. You know, like, I just think, like, he's in the perfect place to be. You know, Kansas City's not like a savage media market. Like, if this guy was like a Dodgers prospect or Yankees prospect or Red Sox prospect or Cubs prospect, and he'd been the number five pick, it would be like, oh, my God, you know, we've blown the pick. Whereas I think in Kansas City, it's like, you know, I think the Royals know what they have in him, too. I don't think the Royals – you know, I don't know if they'd say this on the record, you know, or be this candid. I think the Royals know, okay, this guy's not going to be a superstar. He's not going to be what you hope the fifth pick in the draft would be, but he could still be a useful big leaguer because he's a really good defender. He's a really good base runner, and he's got raw power in there. And he went from looking clueless. I mean, he was horrible in the 2014 Arizona Fall League. To anybody who saw him would have said, no, there's no chance. This guy's not going to hit. And he just made a lot of progress last year. I mean, I think if you played him every day, it's probably a year away from being ready. If you played him every day, you're probably hoping for like you probably get like a 250 hitter and, you know, maybe like a 320 on base percentage and maybe 15 home runs a year, but you get really good defense and he'd be an asset on the bases.
And, you know, some of the guys that we saw last year who came up, Miguel Almonte, Chesler Cuthbert, they got some time in the majors, contributed a little bit, but neither really looked like, the stars. They definitely looked like rookies, Almonte in particular. When we're talking about the guys who are going to be taking over in a couple of years, assuming that Moustakas leaves and other guys leave, are those guys ready? And who are some of the other guys who might be ready to be that next wave of guys who graduate to the majors?
That's the issue right now, is those guys aren't super close. I've never been a huge Cuthbert fan. I always, when I was at Baseball America, I always did a lot of Midwest League prospect stuff. And he had a good year in the Midwest League, and the scouts didn't love him there. The problem is, I think he's kind of a fringy defender at third base. You'd be giving up a lot of defense. I don't think, you know, he's not a big power guy. He's more of a second division regular, if that makes sense. I mean, this is a guy who I could see hitting, I don't know, 260, 270 with a dozen home runs and a few walks, but not a ton, and just kind of a fringy defender. To me, on a good team, he's more of that corner infield backup than an everyday guy. Almonte, you know, his curveball's gotten better. That was always a knock on him. I mean, it's still going to be his third pitch. He's probably, you know, maybe a number four starter. I don't think he's going to be a frontline guy. He was on our top 100 prospect list a couple of years ago, and he's been okay, but hasn't, you know, I think he's kind of plateaued a little bit as he's gotten to AA and AAA. So I think he's kind of, you know, the ceiling's a number four starter, and maybe he's a reliever. You know, as a reliever, he could throw harder and shorter stints, although I think he'd be more fastball change and fastball curve. But, again, I don't think those guys are the guys who, you know, they're not going to – I don't think there's going to be prominent guys, you know, like, kind of like I was saying about Bubba Starlet. Could they contribute to the Royals? Yes. I don't think they're going to replace guys. I mean, the guys who are at the upper levels who could be difference makers, I think, are the two guys on our top 100 list, Mondesi and Zimmer. And then the hope's going to be that some of these guys they've drafted in the last few years develop. But, you know, like the Ash Russells of the world are, you know, 3-4 years away probably at this point.
Okay, so we'll kind of wrap this up here and let you get on with your evening. But before we do, if you can, give us so from the Royal system, we've hit a lot of names and everything, and it seems like every year, you know, there's somebody who kind of takes a leap forward and cements himself as kind of a name to remember in the system. So, you know, from your standpoint, who do you think is going to be that guy for the Royal system in 2016 that maybe takes that leap forward, that all of a sudden is going to be that kind of, for the more hardcore Royals fans, that kind of household name in 2016 for the Royals prospects?
Well, I think in terms of guys who can maybe make – like that leap on the top 100, to me it would be one of these pitchers they've taken in the last two drafts with high picks and given seven-figure bonuses to. You know, whether it's, you know, I probably put in the order I'd probably rank them in would be Ash Russell 1, Scott Blewett 2, and then Foster Griffin. I'd probably put Foster Griffin 3, Nolan Watson 4. But I could see one of those guys taking a step forward. A guy who's kind of a lesser-known guy who I think is on the rise. I don't think this guy is going to be a superstar necessarily, but like Matt Strom's kind of the guy that, like, unless you're a hardcore Royals fan, you probably aren't real familiar with this guy. I mean, he was a 21st round pick out of, well, you guys will have to tell me where's Neosho County in Kansas. He was out of Neosho County Community College.
That's down in, Southwest Kansas. Yeah, Southwest.
I don't even
near
know.
Springfield.
Okay, well, so Neosho, Southern Kansas. Yeah, so anyway, I mean, he was a guy. I mean, one of the things I miss at Baseball America is we did these crazy deep state lists for the draft each year. So on my Kansas list, I think he was actually on our top 500. I liked him as a pitchability lefty. He wound up having Tommy John surgery about a year after he signed and missed some time. But, you know, he's got a chance. I mean, the fastball is a solid to plus pitch. His slider at times can kill lefties. He's still working on a changeup. I mean, this guy had a great year last year in the system. You know, 94 innings, 60 hits, 121 strikeouts. Stuff seemed like a little bit better than it was before the surgery. Yeah, this is a guy who might start to move pretty quick. Again, I don't think this guy's going to pitch at the front rotation, but I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility. If Matt Strom continues to take off like he did last year, Matt Strom might be in the rotation before, you know, mid-2017 or so. He's on the rise. So I think he's kind of the – and I think he – I'm doing our Royals top 10 list. I wish I was further along, but I haven't really started to get a point where I've talked to enough people and put guys in order. But, I mean, Matt Strom's a guy who could crack their top 10 prospects list, and I think he made BA's list. And I would think of all the guys who might factor into their top 10 list, he'd probably be the name that would surprise people the most. I don't think he's got the pedigree, and he hasn't had as much hype as some of these other guys. But he really made a lot of strides last year. He's an interesting guy.
Right on. Yeah, I know the name, but that's pretty much all that we really know. So that's good info from about that for a name for everyone listening to kind of keep your eye on. So with that, I think we'll wrap up. Jim, you have been incredibly gracious in your time. Just a reminder, this was Jim Callis from MLB Pipeline, senior writer there. You can follow him on Twitter at Jim Callis MLB. Give him a follow. Really good follow there. And so just thank you very much for your time. Really appreciate it. A lot of great info on Royal System, and hopefully it can be kind of a refresher for many of the fans who probably have paid less attention.
Yeah, well, it's you guys should keep celebrating. Like I said, I mean, I kind of root for people I know on these various teams, and like I was pumped. I mean, I'm not going to say I was probably not going as crazy as you guys were, but I just felt good. I mean, that was just such a feel good story. Very cool to see Art Stewart get another ring of 30 years after his last one. I'll tell you, my only disappointment was, I spent about 3 weeks in the fall league, and I did not run into Art Stewart this year. I actually ran into Art in 2014, like 2 days after the World Series. I ran into Art, and I was like, and he's like, Art was like, I got to catch up. I'm behind. I'm where I want to be. And it's like, I mean, I hope I have half his energy. Art's probably 40 years older than me now, and I hope I have half his energy when I'm that old. But that was my only regret, is that I did not run into Art so I could congratulate him in person. But just all those guys, I did run into Dayton Moore at the winter meetings. I'll probably talk to JJ Piccolo pretty soon. Just so proud of all those guys, because I mean, as you guys know, it was such they had very little to work with when they got there, and it's not like they had an open checkbook, and they had a belief in how to build a team, and they pulled it off. And I'm getting still excited thinking about it now, and I'm not even a Royals fan.
Well, it's good to know from a national perspective, that there's some of the feelings that we have about the team are kind of shared from people like yourself. So I appreciate you sharing that with us.
Yeah, no, good time talking to you guys. We can do this. I like talking prospects, so anytime you want, and let me know when the podcast is up, and I'll be happy to tweet it out to people so they can listen. It's I'm now going to be thinking about the Royals now probably for the next 20 minutes, and I'll leave you guys with it. I'm sure you have. But have you guys read Art Stewart's book?
I've read parts of it. I have it.
Come on, guys.
I haven't read it either.
Oh, it is. You guys got to get that book. That book has so many stories in it. That book is like the quickest, because it's like if you've ever talked to Art, it's just like you're listening to Art tell you stories, and it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable, the stories in there. Like the guy, unbelievable. Got to get the book. All your listeners should get the book. Put a little more money in Art's pocket. But it's not for that. It is a fun read. So if you've run out of Royals World Series books and publications to read, get Art Stewart's book. And there's a bunch of cool stories about I mean, the guy's been there, I think, since year two. Just great stuff in there.
Absolutely.
We definitely have homework.
Yes, we do.
Next time you come on, I'm going to quiz you on the book. So.
All right. Deal.
All right. Good to know. All right. Well, in that case, we'll let you go on that note. So again, thank you so much, Jim, for giving us some time out of your evening to answer our questions. We really appreciate it.
No problem. Always great talking to you guys. Thanks a lot.
The Kansas City Baseball Vault will be right back after these messages.
I need two claps and a Ric Flair. I said I need two claps and a Ric Flair.
The Vault.
Hey, Troy, what are you doing this weekend?
I'm going to grab a beer somewhere. What do you have in mind?
I heard about this awesome new bar downtown. It's called Rage. The waitresses have a contest to see who has the most piercing.
No, man, that's not really my scene.
Well, there's another bar close by called Spit Cup. Check it out. The bartenders wear chaps, and every hour they shoot a guy.
No, seriously, I just want a bar where I can sit down and watch the game.
Okay, I've got just the place. It's called Lilac. You sit on pillows, drink from eucalyptus leaves.
No, Ned, but I just want a place where I can get a cheap drink and watch the football game.
Okay, I got it. This place, it's got a TV. It's called 816.
Let me just toast it.
All their drinks come in NBA hats.
Man, I just want a place like Kelly's.
Oh, you mean Kelly's Westport Inn? No, they've got all the basketball and bowl game. They've even got a heated roof. The view is really nice, too, if you know what I'm saying. Why didn't you just say you wanted to go to Kelly's?
Kelly's Westport Inn, 500 Westport Road. Make it your place to go any time of the week.
No Halftime, an all-new fantasy sports app that allows you to challenge friends with individual player matchups for real money. Imagine ODB versus Megatron, King James versus Melo. No Halftime is quick and easy and allows you to create challenges on any sport. No Halftime. The fantasy sports season never takes a break. Download the app at nohalftime.com.
Use promo code ROYALS at nohalftime.com to sign up, start playing, and start winning today.
And welcome back into the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. Thank you for sticking with us through the break. We just had Jim Callis from MLB Pipeline on the show. Fantastic guest, super great guy. We've talked to him before. Jim is very knowledgeable, as you can imagine from, or as you would have heard from his interview, and very, very pro Royals right now, especially for someone who, you know, himself doesn't have a skin in the game, if you will, for in terms of the Royals organization. So that's, as I mentioned in the interview, always great to hear from a national perspective when you hear people that are kind of rooting on the Royals as an organization. So that was great to hear. But from the prospect standpoint, Mike, what were your big takeaways from what Jim had to say for us?
Well, it is a very thinned out system. I mean, when you're looking at it, last year they had John Lamb, not really a prospect, but still a name. Brandon Finnegan was a top 10 kind of guy. Sean Manaea was a top 10 guy. Cody Reed was at least like a top 20-ish guy, I think. And all those guys are gone now. They're all, you know, dispersed among the Reds and the A's. And, you know, to show for it, the Royals have Johnny Cueto and Ben Zobrist clips and a really cool trophy. And that's awesome. And in the grand scheme of things, I think they're only going to miss Manaea and possibly Reed. Lamb and Finnegan are replaceable, but still, those are depth guys that could have certainly helped, like, this year in 2016, could have helped 2017 and going forward. And as Jim said, a lot of the, other than Raul Mondesi and other than Kyle Zimmer, the impact guys are really still waiting to develop in the lower levels. So, you know, a guy like Ash Russell, who was drafted last year, is maybe 3 or 4 years away. And when we look at the window for contention is only 2 years. So that does kind of at least tells me that there may be some, maybe not painful years, but some less,
lean.
Yeah, some lean years after a lot of these guys leave, which I really expect all of them to. So it's just going to be like waiting. I mean, then we get back to the same kind of thing, like waiting for when Ash Russell's going to debut and Scott Blewett and can Miguel Amonte turn the corner and things like that.
Yeah, and there's, you know, I think when you look at the Oakland A's, you know, they kind of had a very similar scenario where, you know, starting in 99, they kind of took that leap. They'd only won no more than 78 games the previous 6 years, and then they won 87 games. And then I pulled up their kind of yearly history as we were talking, and then, you know, made the playoffs four consecutive seasons. But then they kind of took a step back, kind of had a little bit lean year, then they went back to the playoffs again, and then they had a few lean years in there, and then they had another run where they had – you know, made the playoffs three straight years, with the most recent one being a loss to the Royals in the playoffs. But yeah. Point being, you know, you've got, let's see, 8 times in 15 years that they made the playoffs. And, you know, the times in between, you know, they never had any terrible years, but a couple 75-win seasons and stuff. So, I mean, obviously I don't want that to happen, but I think that's, you know, a reasonable thing. But you've got not only – you know, a couple of possibly impact players, as Jim Callis was talking about with Mondesi and Zimmer in the system, but then some guys who were kind of, you know, possibly major league average or, you know, solid bench role type players. with some lesser names that we just don't know much about. When you talk about, you mentioned Mike with Ash Russell and guys like Scott Blewett and those types of players. And then we also have to remember the next 2 years, they have two more years worth of draft picks, although one less now that they've signed Ian Kennedy, but two full years of draft picks now. And I wouldn't be surprised if the next year or two, they go college position player heavy in the draft. Because I could definitely see that trying to be a
trying to help up for 2018. Yeah.
And we also can't forget we've the Royals have a guy like Christian Colon, who, you know, can be, he's not on a prospect list, but he's not an everyday major league player, but he's a guy who has shown, hey, you know, maybe the upshot on him is that he can fill that everyday role. And so if we, you know, if the Royals move forward after 2018 or after 2017 with, you know, no Escobar and no everyone else, then maybe Colon's one of those guys who can step in, fill that need and kind of help bridge that gap. So I was actually kind of surprised by his he seemed a little bit more optimistic on the system than I had been. My part of that maybe because of just how less of a focus I've had on it lately, but I was expecting him to give a bottom third ranking, and instead he gave a bottom half ranking. So, you know, I'll take that as a win there. That's a positive in my book. And we didn't get the time to ask him too much detail about Bubba Starling, but I was curious because remember when we had we would have Jason Parks on quite often before he went and started working for the Cubs, and one of the most interesting things I thought he ever said about prospects and with Bubba Starling was who it was about, was how when he talked about the cognitive development of being able to hit a baseball, which is something that, I mean, if you take a step back and don't take it for granted because there's so many baseball players who make it look so easy, like, incredibly difficult thing to do. And
especially hit it is one thing.
Right. But to do it at the level that these players do, you know, like a Mike Trout or somebody, but that is something that's very carefully developed from a cognitive standpoint throughout, you know, your youth all the way up to professional baseball. And everything is so specialized now and so skilled that when you have a player like Bubba Starling, who didn't devote as much time as like an Eric Hosmer growing up to baseball, that there was a little bit of that development that's missing. And the further along he goes, the bigger of a hole that leaves in his game. So I didn't really get to ask Jim about what his thoughts were on some sort of something like that. If it's just something that he's past the point where he can develop and he's never going to get over that hump, which it kind of sounded like he thinks that anyway, but I won't kind of get his thoughts, but I mean, what did you feel on? Because we've kind of gone on this patented David Leskie term of the roller coaster with Bubba Starling. You know, it was the high of a possible MVP caliber player being drafted, and then the low of this guy's not even going to get past AA, and now it's kind of on the upswing again of, hey, maybe we can get some major league time out of this guy. I mean, how do you come away? You come away feeling better or worse about Bubba Starling after that?
I think anytime you can get a first rounder to the big leagues, you won. Mm-hmm. You know, you made it with that pick. And with Starling, I remember a year and a half ago, it seemed like, you know, the rumors were heating up that, oh, well, you know, wait for him to go to Nebraska.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, you know, there's always that rumor that, you know, Cerner's going to buy the Royals or Dayton Moore is going to go to Atlanta. You know, there's always that rumor that this guy heard from that guy or this. But at that point, it felt like a more concrete kind of thing, and that he was about to just turf out of baseball. And, you know, now at least he's had some encouraging years and, you know, seems to be on the uptick. You know, and just about everybody's kind of taken notice that, okay, he's getting better, and maybe it's a maturity thing, maybe it's a comfort thing, maybe it's, you know, a little bit of everything. But I think at this point I'll take it if he makes the big leagues as a reserve outfielder, you know, just because once you make it, you can always kind of bust out or something. Somebody, I don't remember who did it or tweeted this, but somebody mentioned, hey, remember, you know, Lorenzo Cain didn't make his debut until he was, what, 26 or something. And now look at him, you know. And when you saw Cain coming up, he was always a top 10 kind of guy in the Brewers system. But it was a lot of similar stuff. Like, you know, he hasn't played baseball that much. He hasn't been great at the plate, but he can run and he can play great defense. And that's all pretty similar to what Bubba's able to do, except Bubba was, you know, the fifth overall pick. So I think there's still hope, but it's completely reasonable to be, you know, skeptical until he shows something at a AA or AAA level. I mean, it's not like he's knocking on the door right now. It's best case is he debuts in September and gets some time in the big leagues. And, you know, worst case is he just continues to flounder. It's and I don't think he's gonna just dump out at this stage. I think he'll make it, but you know, I you can't expect him to be MVP type of guy. You can't expect him to be like a central figure. You can hope for it, I think, but you can't expect it.
Yeah, and I think it's, you know, it's always important to kind of realign your expectations with the current reality. And the current reality now is, you know, there's an expectation that Starling will be able to, as you said, make it. And I think that's a good place to be right now, considering, you know, how, like you said, there were always the rumors that, you know, he's going to Nebraska. He's, you know, got one foot out the door. He doesn't really care, blah, blah, blah. So if you can go from that, and as Jim Callis was saying, scouts who were, you know, almost universally probably would have said, no way this guy makes the big leagues, to now we're most likely going to get something out of him. That's a win, I think.
Yeah,
you know,
it's encouraging.
From where he was 2 years ago, you know, not necessarily a win from 2011 when he was drafted, but
right,
you know,
it's not the win you thought when you gave him what, $8 million.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, I don't know how well he's going to do, you know, to start the season, but, and this is one kind of prospect area that we have kind of discussed in some of our email threads recently, but I mean, if he were to come out and just like say he hits 300 or better in AAA, if he starts in AAA for the first 2 months of next season, you know, and the Royals still don't have right field figure out and they're kind of platooning around, I could definitely see them pulling him up around midseason and giving him a shot at right field, because worst case scenario, he gives you better defense than Dyson or Orlando can give you. And
maybe he hits.
Best case is maybe he does. Maybe he pulls a 2011 Sal Perez and just, you know, just starts running, sprinting right out of the gate. So, I mean, there's Starling is an easy place for irrational hope for me, because
right,
there's so many tools, so much talent that you've seen that you're just like, man, you know,
he looks like he should be a star.
Yeah, if something were to just click, man, this guy could be just unbelievable. And the rational side of me says it's not going to happen. And his line last year in Double A in 91 games might actually be the kind of player he ends up being. He had 254 last year with a 318 on base percentage, but 426 slugging. He had 10 home runs and 32 RBIs in 91 games. So, you know, one and a half. So roughly he's a,
that's about where Jim Callis was kind of projecting and guessing.
I mean, if he's a 250 hitter with a 320 on base and a 420 slugging and hits 10 to 15 home runs and gives you 65-70 RBIs in a season, and he's your seven hitter and gives you gold glove defense out in right field, I'll take that every single day of the week.
Yes. I mean, that's, these guys, they just have to be above replacement level. And I think any of them can be at least approaching the regular, you know, being regulars. You know, we saw Cuthbert, and I, you know, I know what the scouting reports have always said, that he's, you know, slow and he's not very athletic, but I mean, he looked like he was for real. He looked like there was something there in spots, and whether that ever comes back, if it ever really materializes, who knows? But it sure seemed like, you know, he wasn't intimidated by the level or anything.
No.
I mean, you know, you compare him to if, like Moustakas or anything, maybe he doesn't ever have the kind of power and maybe the defense isn't there, but, you know, I think he can jump in and take that place, you know, when the time comes. If someone like Dozier isn't ready or somebody else doesn't step up. So, you know, I feel okay about someone like him, and Almonte, I think, will figure it out. And that's kind of all that's out there. I mean, you got Cologne, who, if he needed to take over shortstop for a year, if Montesi's still not ready, then, yeah, I mean, I guess you could do that. But it's really, at this stage, waiting on those guys in the lower levels, you know, like Griffin and Blewett and Russell. I mean, those are all A-ball kind of guys. And, you know, that's where it gets kind of tough to wait. And, you know, a lot of those guys, they still have a lot of that upside left, but they also still have a lot of opportunities to hit walls as they move up. You know, once you hit A-ball and high A, the next levels are big jumps. And you've seen a lot of guys just hit that wall in double A, and they never really do much else. Chris Dwyer, Mike Montgomery kind of was a guy like that until he finally got some consistency and broke through. And even though these guys are highly touted, you know, it's still, you've got to be better than the best double A guys to go to triple A, and you got to be better than the best triple A guys to go to the majors. And then you've got to survive in the majors, and, you know, it's the best of the best, and not everybody's going to be, you know, the best of anything. You look at, you know, the top, you know, those nine guys that Callis referenced that were in the Baseball America top 100, you know, I think you had John Lamb, who you wouldn't consider really, you know, meeting that. Jake Odorizzi might. Chris Dwyer definitely didn't. He ran into a lot of problems. And so, you know, even when you get guys who are highly touted, you know, they still hit the wall. You know, Montgomery was among those guys. It's just, you know, it's, you make your best guess on what the tools are and how they're going to develop, but, you know, they still have to go do it. And, you know, there's always surprises, and there's always, you know, changes in how someone adjusts to a new level or new competition, or if they have a book on them. And so that's what they're all fighting against. And, you know, hopefully, you know, like he said, you might have, you know, five of these guys and one or two break out. And that's kind of what you're looking for. And you hopefully can supplement with guys who can contribute around them. And so, you know, when we get to 2018, you know, hopefully it's close for the Royals to do that. And like you said, they've got 2 years to draft guys. They've got 2 years to do international signings, you know, so they can always replenish, and maybe they find, you know, some 21-year-old guy from, you know, coming out of college who's pretty ready to, you know, start in double A, and in 2 years he's in the big leagues, and then the whole equation changes. But, you know, for now what they have, yeah, it's a system that's thinned out through guys graduating and guys getting traded. And so, you know, you're kind of waiting on everybody and hoping that the big league team continues to be successful so that, you know, you get that before a lot of them depart, and it gets a little bit more rough.
Yeah, you know, it's really and you've got to remember here too, the Royals, I think conventional wisdom right now is that Ian Kennedy is gonna take advantage of his own opt out after 2 years. But, you know, theoretically, you've got Kennedy under contract for 2018. Gordon's under contract, Perez is under contract, Ventura's under contract. You know, those are four pretty big cogs right there.
Yeah.
And, you know, I hope the Royals take Callis's advice with Mondesi, where they kind of give him a little time to breathe and maybe, you know, just be like, hey, we just want you to get your feet under you this year. The World Series, everything moved so quick. we're going to start you in Double A. We know you're going to be in Triple A by June, but we just want to give you some time to just chill out and get yourself, you know, mentally prepared, and then after that you'll move as fast as you can move, you know. And so that would be great, but then by, you know, 2017, if you kind of put him in at second base, you can get a year. I'd love to see a year of Escobar, at least 1 year of Escobar and Mondesi. And then, I mean, could you
kind of, what if they end up with Bubba and Wright?
I was just going to say that.
It's like, oh my God, just like,
as good as this Royals defense is, if you had Hosmer, Mondesi, Escobar, Moose, and then freaking Gordon Kane.
What do you do? Even if you get on base, you can't steal.
It's literally like there's a tarp on the field. And just, the ball is not allowed to hit the ground. I mean,
you've got Gold Glover and Hosmer. You've got Moose, who's underrated and overrated sometimes, but I think he's a good defender. And then you've got three guys who won't let the ball drop, plus a wicked middle infield. That would be crazy. I mean, what do? You just hope to walk and hit a home run?
Pretty much.
And then you got to do that within six innings.
And then, you know, if that's by 2017, where then you've got, you know, maybe Ventura is that ace that we all hope he is, and you've still got, you know, maybe Zimmer comes up, and if Zimmer can stay healthy, and Cal City could be one of the better pitchers, you know, in the minors right now. So if he can stay healthy, and then he becomes, I mean, good Lord, that's a team right there, you know, and that's, you know, 2 years from now.
Yeah.
Or not 2 years, but, you know, next two seasons. But I mean, man, that's exciting to think about. That's a possibility. Cause even, I mean, I like to look at it is right now, you know, last year, the first half of the season and all of 2014, basically, and the Royals got basically nothing below replacement level from right field and second base.
Yeah.
Offensively and then even defensively as well. So if you were to take in 2017 and bring up guys like Starling and Zimmer or Starling and Mondesi, and even if you got the same, it's going to be hard to do worse than what
Infante
in 2014 and the first half of 2015. Yeah, it's going to be hard to do worse than that offensively. So if you could just do that and then give way better defense, I mean, that's a net win for the Royals still. So man, that's a fun thought right there, just to think about
how they're going to be in a weird spot after this year, because you know, it's just like in 2017, if they're still really good and competitive, you still kind of want to go for it. But there's also the idea of like, and who knows, the CBA will be restructured by this point. So who knows what draft compensation is going to be at this stage. But, you know, if it just works out the way it is now, you know, I mean, yeah, the Royals would get a bunch of draft picks for, you know, Kane and Hosmer and Moustakas, et cetera, for, you know, rejecting what I assume would be a qualifying offer, you know, and that's great to be able to replenish that way, but it's also not like immediate. It's you're still drafting guys and
4 years down the road.
Yeah. And in some of those cases, a guy like Hosmer could be pretty valuable as a trade chip. And you hate to think about that because it, you know, you assume the Royals are going to be in position to be contending for the division again next year. There's no reason they shouldn't be. And then if that means that you're basically winning the division and trading your, you know, one of your most popular and best players because they can get you prospects, then that kind of sucks. And
yeah.
And I don't know how you balance that, because there's got to be a point where they're talking about it with that a possibility, just because you do kind of have to replenish. You know, it is you know, probably the best value move to do to continue to have, you know, depth in your system and guys who can step in later, and really maximize that compensation that you're going to get, considering it's a draft pick versus what could be three guys with two of them being high upside guys. And so I don't know how you make that decision. That's really difficult. Plus there's just the PR side of it. You know, how can you have all these winning seasons? I'm assuming 2016 is a winning season, and then trade anybody, you know. And if you're like in first place in July, well, you can't trade those guys then. So you're just going to have to ride it out and hope the draft hits. And it's, you know, that's a little scary, but you know, hopefully again, some of these guys will be ready to jump in and then all those draft picks bear fruit. But it's just like, I don't know how you can balance that. That's going to be one of the more interesting decisions in the next year and a half of what the Royals do, because it's very clear they know that window. It's pretty easy to see it. It's right there. Big blinking 2017, like an exit sign on the freeway. It's just like, it's pretty clear where things are lining up. It's just a matter of seeing what they do with it.
Yeah, no, that is most definitely the most intriguing thing about the next 2 years for me. Cause like you said, the lineup is set basically for the next 2 years. We know what they're going to get. I mean, the biggest question mark, past this year, Edinson Volquez and Kendrys Morales, their contracts are up. So that's kind of a question, but I would not be shocked to see both of them sign maybe another 2 year contract and then you've got, you know, if you sign both of them to say they both sign 2 year, $20 million contracts, then you've got, all that does is give you a, you know, not too cheap, not too expensive way to give you more stability and help hopefully bridge that gap between 2017 and when you can keep, when you can go back to World Series talk. But it's really interesting. And I think Dayton Moore has obviously shown that he is not one to look at players as numbers on a page, as a commodity, as that type of a thing. He develops relationships with these players. He rewards them as such. And so it leads me to believe that he's not going to make any sort of moves like that. But I mean, you, it would probably be within the organization's best interest. I don't think you touch 2016. I think you're set on that. You let that ride out, so you don't make any like trade. I mean, unless they're like, if they're 10 games under 500 and in fourth place in the trade deadline, maybe they shake things up a little bit. But I don't think that's going to happen. So you ride out 2016, and if they were to win a World Series again in 2016, then I think they're fully within their right, and I think it would be prudent at that point to trade off a piece or two. I mean, if you think about how much could the Royals replenish the farm system if, say, Yordano Ventura takes a big step forward next year and becomes this really good player? I mean, you could trade Yordano Ventura and Eric Hosmer. Again, I'm not advocating for this. I'm simply stating just kind of a realm of possibility here. I mean, you get Yordano Ventura and Eric Hosmer. I mean, right there, you're talking somewhere between 6 to 8 top 10 prospects for a, you know, top 10 organizational prospects for those two players right there. So, I mean, right there, then you're completely replenishing your top 10. And for both of them, you can most likely get, you know, a double A, triple A guy who's ready to make that quick leap. And so, you know, whether you're going to replace talent for talent, who knows, but it's, you know, those are the types of decisions that are going to be tough to make, but stuff that, you know, winning once a World Series, I think, gives them the, you know, carte blanche, if you will, to do what they need to do. But especially if they were to win again, or just even just make a deep run, you know, an ALCS run, or maybe even get back to the World Series a third time. Good God, if that happened. But, you know, and even if they didn't win, but, you know, I definitely think the prudent move is to make that happen, is to do a trade of some commodity just to inject a little new life into the system, regardless of what happens in 2016. I don't think that's what Dayton Moore will do, just knowing from his his history with established players. But I definitely think there's merit in that discussion of what they should do in that scenario, because they did, you know, and as Jim Cowell said, I'm never going to say, man, I really wish the Royal, or I might say I wish they had a Sean Manaea or a Cody Reed, but I'm never going to say they shouldn't have made that trade.
Right.
You know, so that it was absolutely 100% worth it. And, you know, never looking back on that. But, you know, at the same time, you say it did thin out the system, as you said, Mike. It's I think that's probably the smartest move, but I don't think Dayton Moore's going to do it.
No, it's reasonable, but I don't think they'll do that. I don't really want them to do it either. You know, I just want to see him run it out. And if that means that you lose a bunch of guys and you have to, you know, draft guys in the 30 to 40 range in an amateur draft, well, that's fine. You know, that's all right. Sean Manaea was one of those kind of picks. So there's going to be talent there a lot of years. And it would give them, if they had 5 or 6, you know, supplemental draft picks after 2017, it would give them some level of, I guess, freedom to take higher upside, riskier guys who, you know, if you've got one pick, there's a lot of risk there. If you've got 5, well, you can imagine that maybe some of those other guys might be able to cushion the blow if this guy doesn't, you know, turn into anything. But you still give yourself the opportunity that, hey, maybe he's another Sean Manaea who could be, you know, one of the top left-handed, you know, starting pitching prospects in the game. And then you look in pretty good shape once that comes around. So, you know, I get, and that's assuming that the compensation for a departing free agent is the same in 2 years. I think it's
right.
CBA expires this December.
I don't think it'll be the same, but I think there will be something.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be radically different either. It might be in just the way that you determine, you know, how it's determined.
Yeah,
I think it's just going to be a little different because they didn't change it drastically last time, and the owners are going to be pretty happy because the qualifying offer thing is doing for a lot of people exactly what it was kind of hoping to do, and that's, you know, depress the value of those guys when they hit free agency. And you see it, you know, a couple of years down, you know, after a couple of years of doing that, that there's always guys who end up at this stage who aren't on a team. I mean, you know, Ronnie Gallardo and, I lost every other guy who was in it, but, you know, Gallardo is like the main pitcher left. In past years, Irvin Santana went late.
Kendrys Morales was because he was a qualifying offer guy, wasn't he?
Morales. Yeah, he was. 2 years. Yeah.
And that's why his 2014 was so bad.
Yeah, because he didn't get spring training. Like once they signed him, he had to be on the 40, and he had to be in the active roster, and so he basically had to come in cold off the street, and he didn't look good, and you know. He looked like a complete waste of anybody's time. And then, you know, obviously got a full season to actually prepare and everything. And the rest is history.
Mm-hmm.
So
quite literally.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting. I guess I'm encouraged in a way because there is a lot of pitching depth and that can always be, you know, pitching depth in the minor league system. You know, because you kind of get in the same spot where, hey, maybe after this year, a couple of those guys really do jump. Because I remember in 2010, John Lamb kind of came out of nowhere and was like, oh, yeah, we expect him to be good. And then he was just really good for that whole season, pretty much. And, you know, just felt really comfortable with where he was. And he took a big step. And, you know, then, you know, that offseason, they got Jake Odorizzi. And it was like, okay, well, now we got this guy, too. So, you know, I think a lot's going to be, you know, changing between now and this time next year. And, you know, some of these guys will probably jump up and new guys will emerge and some guys will fall and, you know, we'll see. Yep.
We will see.
I just don't, I don't know what to expect. But.
And there's a lot of intriguing names of guys that are just really young that we still don't know much about. Like you look at like Elior Hernandez. I mean, he was a huge international signing, you know, 7-figure guy and hasn't really done much, but a lot of talent there still, you know, some like Martin Gasparini. I mean, he's shown some flashes down and he was kind of another solid international signing. He's super young and, you know, those guys. So there's still some guys that really can take that leap. But I think we'll end on this, Mike. I got a question for you.
Okay.
So, of all the players, talk 2013 to now, all the prospects that the Royals have given up, who's the one guy you would want back right now? I'm not saying like you have to, if you wanted Will Myers, you'd have to say that the James Shields trade didn't happen or whatever. Assuming everything else plays out exactly the same, who's the one guy you want back right now of all those prospects? So we're talking, you know, Will Myers, Mike Montgomery, John Lamb, Sean Manaea, Cody Ree, like all those players. Who's the one guy?
I still
for this season.
Still got to go Will Myers.
Going Will Myers, huh?
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to, you said 2013. I'm going to count him as.
Oh, no. Yeah. He was definitely in the.
Yeah. I'm going to count him for that. Yeah. I mean, I would say that. I think he's still, you know, the. You look at what he did his rookie year. He was just phenomenal. He's had a lot of injuries and a lot of, like, bouncing around positions since. But, you know,
Will Myers in center field cracks me up.
That's
something that happened, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, if you.
And now he's at first base. So imagine how that went. Yeah, it's got to be Will Myers to me. I mean, I like the other guys. I like Manaea a lot. But, you know, Will Myers is the only guy who looked like he would be a regular all-star and put up numbers to some extent to back that up.
I think. If it's me, I think I would go with Jake Odorizzi.
Yeah.
Just because of the premium on pitching. And he looks like he could be a guy that moving forward is just a very stable, very solid, very good pitcher that, you know, because – Will Myers, his rookie season was great, but like you said, he's had his kind of ups and downs. And I don't know. I with the way the Royals roster fills out right now, I think a Jake Odorizzi would help more than a Will Myers would.
Yeah, I could see that. I would buy that. And Odorizzi, I mean, he was good when he was in the Royal system, and he's gotten better. So, I mean, he'd definitely be a good number two for that. I'd still go Myers. I just think he's got the most upside to turn into something huge of all those guys. But Odorizzi would be, I mean, he could be a number three starter for 15 years and have some upside to be a little better than that.
Yeah. And
that's absolutely. Really valuable. That's extremely valuable. So
very, very Mark Gubazov like career, I think could possibly happen for someone like like Odorizzi. So that's probably where I would go with that. But that's just for 2017. If you want to talk 2018, 2019, I think I might shift it to Sean Manaea.
Maybe.
But for 2016, I think I'd go with Odorizzi.
Fair. Neither is wrong.
Neither is wrong. Nope. Both players would make the team better.
Yes.
But both players are without a World Series championship, and the Royals have one. So
that's true.
Worth. So, all right. Well, I think we're going to leave you with that, folks. We had a lot of good show for you tonight. Another big shout out to Jim Callis for joining us on the show this evening. Yep. Big thanks to him for that. You can follow him again. That's at Jim Callis MLB on Twitter. Callis is spelled C-A-L-L-I-S, not Callis like something you get on your finger. So a lot of good prospect info, not just the Royals, obviously, for the entire all of baseball coming out from him. So give him a follow. And yeah, I think that's it. This will probably be the last you'll hear from me for a little bit. We're recording this as of February 4th right now. So my first child is due on February 9th. So we'll see. That's we're trending towards that date right now, according to doctors and everything. So next week, that's gonna be the thing. So my first month of of February it's gonna be completely life altering in the most realist sense of that phrase. So I don't know if I'll have time to do the show. We've got some guest hosts lined up for you. I believe we got
voices.
Craig Brown, I believe, is one. We got Ben from he was what was the I feel so terrible. What was the name of their
Ben play? Nielsen and Audra were on Walk Off Talk.
Walk Off, that's what it was. Walk Off Talk.
And then so, yeah. Hunter Samuels is going to help out as well. He was also on the Triple Play podcast. So
that's okay. Got those two. So yeah, we got some good guest hosts, but this is not the end for me. I will definitely be back. Just that first month is, for those of you who have kids, probably know, is going to be a little rough. So it's just
I wonder if they're just laughing at you, like, yeah, 3-4 weeks. I'll yeah. They're like,
yeah,
okay,
no, or like 3-4 years.
Yeah.
So yeah, we'll kind of feel it out after that first month and see how it is. But hopefully, after we hopefully by then we can get some sort of a routine to where I can at least sneak away for an hour.
And maybe my wife actually have to hold out and say when it's a short show that it will be a short show.
Yes. Well, my daughter will make an appearance on air and then we'll have to say,
that's going to be it
next week. Yes. But, if not next month, then I should, by the start of the season, I should be able to get, cause it's one of those things that, it's only going to get easier in terms of getting into a routine and that kind of thing with the child. So the first month or so is going to be rocky, but we'll figure it out and I will be back. So, there is that little bit of news, but thank you all so very much for listening. We couldn't do this without you. I am so just you kind of, sounds corny and all that, but you do kind of think about things and put things into perspective when you've got a child on the way. So it's just like it's really, I love doing this show and I love doing it with you, Mike. And I think it's just like it's one of the things that, when we used to do the show at Kamler's place, he always described it as like, he never really had like a poker night or anything.
Yeah.
with the boys, if you will. And that was kind of the way what it was for him. And, that's kind of the way it feels, just something where you always know, we've got to, just to do this and it's something fun we all enjoy. And it, allows, hopefully it's a good avenue for you guys as listeners and the fans. So, I definitely, and fully intending on coming back just because I do enjoy doing this so much. So thank you guys for giving us the opportunity to keep doing this show and to support us and everything. And next time you hear from me, I will be a father. So that's incredibly exciting and scary at the same time. But
and also the Royals are world champions.
Also that, yes. There's a nice little bit of symmetry there of me being – it's technically not quite the same, but me being born the year the Royals won the World Series and now my daughter's being born just a few months after they won the World mm-hmm. Series again. So there's a little symmetry there. It's close enough for me to call it that.
I think it's fair.
Yes, absolutely fair. So there you go. All right. Well, with that, we will bid you adieu with that one. So thanks everyone again for listening. For Michael Engel and myself, Jeff Herr, this has been the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. Thanks for stopping by, and as always, go Royals.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can find us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/Kansas City Baseball Vault. If you want to email your thoughts or comments, send those to kansascitybaseballvault@gmail.com. And don't forget, you can also sign up and subscribe through iTunes, through Stitcher, or you can just go to royalspodcast.com or kansascitybaseballvault.com for any updates.